Good morning. Is this working? I've got a really bad relationship with this microphone already. How you guys doing this morning? Good. You know, I read on the news this morning that we're going to get like 12 to 18 inches, or 3 feet. I guess I don't know for sure how much, but it's going to be a lot, and I'm not happy about it. As Jeremy said, my name is Matt. Most of you have met me or know me. I'm excited to be here with you this morning to talk a little bit about work and worship, some really important stuff. My family's been at this church for like 7, 8 years, something like that. We're really excited to be here. Looking at the snow forecast, though, I began to think back to some of my favorite times at Cornerstone, and some of them had snow in the ground and men's retreat. And we've got a men's retreat coming up in January. Look for details in your bulletin, and I really encourage you to come to men's retreat. Dr. Kent McKinnon will be speaking on fearless faith. It should be a good time, but one of the best times at men's retreat is always football. And usually there are 3 feet of snow. And I remember somewhat early in my Cornerstone career here, we were playing snow football at a men's retreat, and I'll never forget, Pastor Ron was playing, and he dislocated his finger. I found some pictures on Google of what it looked like, but I decided not to put them up. It was awful. But Ron walked around. Ron was a great guy, Pastor Ron. He walked around, and he showed everybody. He was like, look how cool, my finger, it's injured. And he tried to get as many man points out of it as he possibly could before Cliff Porter did what any good nurse would do and took him to the hospital. I also remember, while playing football, this was the first time that my church brothers betrayed me. We were playing snow football, as we often do, and on this particular day, the snow was only about 6-7 inches deep, but it was icy, like it was so cold, and there was a layer of ice on top of the snow. You were there, you remember, still don't love you for it. Anyway, I'm playing quarterback for my team, and we had just called a play as a team, and I get down, and I said, you know, 10 hut, right? And as I'm getting ready, I hear the defense start shouting out, M.A., M.A., M.A. play. And I'm like, that's weird they have a defensive play, but whatever. Then I hear a couple of guys on my line yell, M.A., kind of back to him. And I thought, man, I don't know what's going on here, right? I would in a minute. As I hike the ball, the entire defense comes swarming at me, like every single one. No one goes out in pass protection, right? And I'm like, okay, I can handle this because now everybody's going to be open. No, everyone on my team turned around and ran straight towards me as well. And soon I would be under a pile of like 1,500 pounds of grown men with nothing but me and ice and snow beneath me. It was quite wonderful. So come to men's retreat. It's great. If you're not like me, it might be better for you. If you have your Bibles with you this morning, we're going to get into the Word. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 5. Open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5 if you don't have a Bible with you. We've got a table in the back with Bibles on it, and we invite you to go ahead and take one. If you don't own a Bible, please take it home with you and keep it. Bring it back next week. We're big believers in the Bible here at Cornerstone. Small group is going right now, and in my small group this week, and maybe in your small group as well, you covered these verses in Matthew chapter 5. Read with me verse 13 to start. You are the salt of the earth. This is Jesus talking. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. I got to be thinking about this saltiness thing and how can salt lose its saltiness, and I guess I've never really heard of that idea, that salt could lose its saltiness. And I had started an email to a pastor, like, hey man, I'm going to preach on this verse. Can you tell me what it means? And then I got this idea in my head of what it would be like if something lost its flavor. I've been married now for, she's not here, like 11 or 12 years, something like that. And and I still remember the first time I met her parents. My wife, now wife, then, were dating. It was the first time I had gone back to Wisconsin to meet her family. And her mom, all day, had been saying, telling me how excited she was to make steak for me. She had heard that as a young man, I loved steak, and I was really excited, and she had got me kind of excited, and we spent the whole day, and I'm trying so hard to be impressive, right? And if you know me, that's a problem. And I'm trying so hard, and I'm hungry, and I'm tired, and it's getting late, and I notice no one's turned on the grill, and I say, hey, you want me to go turn on the grill? And her dad says, no, it's fine, we'll get it later. And I'm okay, it's getting kind of late. And I could tell that mom's cooking in the kitchen and stuff, but I'm new here. I'm not trying to make waves. I'm just trying to get my steak. And my whole day changed when I see her yell, dinner's ready, as she pulls out a plate of meat from the microwave. And it was like steak, really, this is the closest picture I could find, but it was much, much worse than this. And what she had done is taken cheap steak and microwave cooked it. And then had like taken a knife and hacked it into like pieces. And was like, here's the steak. And I remember my heart sank because I did not know how I was going to possibly choke this down. Right? She had ruined steak. She had wrecked it completely. And once the steak had lost its flavor, there was no redeeming this steak. And yeah, I poured a lot of salt on there, and I took my chunk, and I tried to eat it like, I love steak, and inside I'm crying, just weeping for the animal that lost itself, its life for this travesty that would happen to it later. And I remember thinking that there's no way this can be redeemed. I almost broke up with her right there, actually, just because my goodness. But once the steak has lost its flavor, it cannot be restored. You can't go back and add flavor to it. It is so important to Jesus that we are the salt of the earth. And many of you have heard this term, salt of the earth. This is a Jesus term. He has called us to be salt of the earth, to be flavorful, to matter, to make a difference in our world. And this is an exciting call and a great challenge for us. We're going to talk about it a little bit more this morning. Keep moving on, verse 14. I use this tiny Bible so I can hold it while I'm preaching, but it's super hard to read. And the older I get, the more I feel bad for John Mittelstadt. You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Now, if you have kids and you're like me, you probably took them out trick-or-treating a couple weeks back. And when you're out trick-or-treating with your children, what's kind of the rule about where to find sweet, sweet, delicious candy? It's the houses with the light on, right? And if a house doesn't have a light on, we say, no kids, monsters live there. Let's move on to a place that will give us sweet, sweet, delicious candy. And so my kids learned that the light would be the guide, to where we would find delicious candy. And every year, I'm a big fisherman, and every year I like to go fishing. And if you are like me, sometimes you think, well, it's getting dark, but it's not too dark. And then when it's time to go in and find the cabin again, and you're on a lake that you don't know super well, you have this kind of a scene. And you're not quite sure if you're going to crash or not. And you're not quite sure if you're going to make it home safely. And you probably should have left sooner. But thankfully, you remembered to turn the light on when you left. And there's one lone light deep in the distance, and you aim your boat for it, and you go. And that one light, that's your safe place. That light will guide you home. And so when we're called to be a light, Jesus says, you are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. We're called to be a guide. We're called to be a help. We are called to be a safe place in a dark, dark world. And Jesus makes an obvious statement. He says, when you light a lamp, you don't cover it with a basket. Well, that would be dumb. And in Jesus' time, a light was a candle. So if you put a basket over a candle, it would be especially flammable. And Jesus says you should not cover the light, but you should put it on a stand so that all may see. And this is what we're called to be in our work, in our lives, in all that we're about. We're called to be a light so that everyone can see us and give glory to God. And what kind of salt and light are you in your workplace? What kind of flavor, what kind of compelling person are you? Do people care about what you have to say? Do people find you to be a safe place where they can go when they're in a dark, dark spot? Whether you are an employee or a boss or a stay-at-home mom or dad, a retiree, or some of many of these things, all of us have work that we are about every day, every week. And God has called us to be salt and light to people that we interact with. This morning, we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of being salt and light at work. I've been running my own business for about 11 years. I shouldn't know that better than how long I've been married, huh? But I've been running my own business for about 11 years. And as we talked in small group this week about being salt and light at work, one of the things that occurred to me is some of the stuff that really is involved in being salt and light at work doesn't sound very spiritual. And so when we talk about being salt and light at work, a lot of us have pictures of like putting up a picture of Jesus at our desk or clever bumper stickers, right? Or listening to Christian music. And all of these things are not bad things, but I want to talk to you about the function of being salt and light at work. And this morning I hope to convince you that effective Christian impact at work cannot and will not happen until you've earned respect and until you've demonstrated character over a long period of time. If you're in a workplace or you've been in a workplace like I have, you probably know that the language of business is respect. In your life, in your church, in your family, there are many languages, many things that matter, many things that if you were born out on a farm, the language that your family might speak is hard work. And if you were born in the city, the language your family might speak is green and recycle. And in the church, our language is relationships. But at your workplace, number one, the language is respect. I've worked in many workplaces. And every single job, every single role, every single thing I could think about in coming to this sermon agrees that language is the respect, or respect, language is the respect. Respect is the language of business. Noted business coach, leadership guru, author, and former pastor John Maxwell once said, "When you get respect, it opens the door." If you gain respect, you're going to be salt and light. Don't share Christ with them until you've got their respect, because it's a message that will fall absolutely nowhere. Respect is important in a lot of places, but it is absolutely important in the workplace. And let me ask you, are you respected at your job? Are you the kind of person that people look up to? Are you the kind of person that people come to ask for help, even though helping them isn't your job? Are you the kind of person that your boss can count on, and when he really needs to go to someone, he comes to you? Are you the kind of person that your coworkers look to when they're having a personal life crisis? So how do you do it? How do you earn respect at work? I would say that how we earn respect at work is through excellence at our role. Absolute excellence at our role. A few weeks ago, Pastor Jeremy talked about a young man who was sold into slavery, Joseph. And Joseph, though he was a slave, rose to prominence in his home, where he was put over everybody and everything because he was excellent at his work and God was absolutely with him. He was then falsely imprisoned, and we find shortly after he's imprisoned that he is literally running the prison. This man earned respect very quickly, and God was certainly with him. We find after prison, he meets with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is immediately impressed with what he sees out of this young man. And Pharaoh puts Joseph to be second in the country. He says, when you come around, Joseph, every knee will bow. Joseph was excellent at whatever task was put in front of him. And you see that he was able to have an amazing impact even though he was a foreigner, a slave, an owned person in another country. You've heard of Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel was also sold into slavery as a young man. He was captured. And as a young man, he came into slavery and he asked the king, he said, can I please honor my God and eat the food that I want and learn the way I want to learn? And God blessed him. And Daniel, through his excellence, was allowed to make requests of the king. And eventually the king was so impressed with him. Multiple kings were so impressed with him that he rose to prominence. And even when they tried to take him down, the king regretted ever making a law that would hurt Daniel. Because even though the king and Daniel had differing beliefs about who God was, Daniel absolutely had the king's respect. There's so many stories of excellence in our scriptures. David, who excelled at everything he did. Saul, the king, killed his thousands, and David killed his 10,000s. He was a song. Jacob, Abraham, even Jesus. The stories are so clear that God is with people when they are excellent. And when they are excellent, they earn respect. Even in a world that is against everything that they believe in, they still are able to earn the respect of those around them. And are you excellent at your work? Are you the kind of person who is constantly trying to be better? Are you the kind of person that your boss looks up to? Are you the kind of person who is knowledgeable? If you're an accountant, do you go to work and do the bare minimum you can because you know you can get by? Or are you the best accountant? Are you the one that people around town want to call when they have a really tricky problem? Are you a teacher? Do parents ask that their kids can be in your class? Are people so impressed with the way that your kids learn and the patience that you demonstrate that you're asked to show other teachers how to teach? Are you a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad? Are your kids well-behaved? Do you discipline them in such a way that earns respect with those around you? Are you learning and trying to be better? Are your kids engaged and active? So what do? What's your primary source of work? Do you work hard? Are you still trying to get better? Or are you just punching a clock? Just showing up, putting in your time, and leaving. Getting a paycheck, not making any kind of difference of any kind. It's a hard challenge, isn't it? There's a lot of us who actually really started out trying super hard when we got our job. I see it in real estate all the time. The average real estate agent gets their license, and in 2 years when it's time to renew, 80% don't make it. The attrition rate is extremely high in my business, and the reason is this, because real estate agents are generally the type of people with lots of energy and excitement, and we work super hard when we're really, really passionate, and then we kind of let it go. when it gets hard over time. It's hard to be excellent at what you do. And listen, even if you're not in business, you completely understand. Those of you with more than one kid, you'll completely get this. You remember your first kid, right? You're on the floor playing with them and talking and singing songs to your belly, right? I mean, it was so much fun, trains, and you knew all the songs, and you even watched Caillou, And you loved the kid, right? And you took care of him, you played with him, and pictures. Oh my goodness, when it was picture time, you took like a gajillion pictures. This kid couldn't pee without getting his picture taken, right? And you have pictures of every little thing that it ever did, and you were so excited. And then by like kid two or three, you're really excited you got the older kids to kind of watch the little ones so you can be on your computer, right? I mean, and frankly, with pictures, it's really good that they took yearbook pictures, because if there weren't yearbook pictures, there is no way that your kid would even have any known existence. Sorry, boss. I'm just kidding. Obviously, I'm just kidding. We all love our kids, but we do things. And over time, we tend to let down our efforts. That's normal. That's a part of who we are. And God calls us to more. Do you want to be salt and light at your work? Do you want to matter in what you do? Then earn their respect. Do you want to earn their respect? Then be excellent at what you do. Not good, excellent. So how do you be an excellent employee or boss? I'm going to cover through this pretty quickly today. If you're an employee that wants to be an employee that everyone respects, it's really important that you do some stuff. There's lots of things that you can do to be a great employee. I'm going to list five that I think are important and talk through them with you. See if you can see yourself in any of these. Are you reliable? Can you be counted on to show up on time? Can you be counted on to be working in the last 15 or 20 minutes of your workday? Are you the kind of person that the boss can come to and know that the project you've said you can get done, you'll get done? Are you the kind of person, are you the kind of person who not only can take care of giant projects, but also takes care of all of the little things and makes sure things stay managed? Respect is absolutely earned when you are a reliable employee. Number two, cultivate good relationships. This is so important, and so many of us miss this because we're punching a clock. We're just trying to get through our day, and we don't care what our other coworkers and what our boss, we don't care what they think of us. Just let me do my job and get out of here. But a Christian, someone who earns respect, someone who's going to be salt and light in their workplace, absolutely works and cultivates the relationships with those around them. Are you known for being likable and helpful where you work? Are you the kind of person that people want to get put on a project with? Are you the kind of person people think is constantly negative, constantly angry, constantly curmudgeon-y? Do people have an idea that you actually care about them, even though you don't have to? Or do you pick petty fights? Are you the kind of person who's constantly contentious? Are you constantly fighting with your boss, with your coworkers? Are you constantly just picking at people because you can and you feel it's your right? Are you known as a peacemaker? Cultivate good relationships at work and you will gain respect. Number three, this is a hard one for a lot of us. Take criticism gracefully. So many of us, myself included, when we get criticized, we tend to say, that person's an idiot, right? They couldn't know. If they gave me this criticism, they're clearly stupid. But criticism can be used. It can be cultivated. It can be taken internally and help us to grow, help us to become even better at our job, and help us to understand the expectations that our boss has for us even more. Not being good at taking criticism is really a sign of pride. If you get criticized and you lash out, it's probably you having the idea that you are as good as you could possibly be. And while it doesn't come from that mind, it does come from that heart. Number four, and this one is huge. Don't gossip. Don't do it. In every workplace I've ever been in, before my current workplace, there was gossip everywhere, all the time, constantly. And if you're in a corporation, I found it most when I was in corporate cultures, the gossip is ridiculous, it's constantly negative, and it's always, always backbiting. And there's always something to complain about. There's always somebody who's dumber, stupider, did something that shouldn't have done, can't believe they got promoted. Always. And those of you in corporate America, you know this. And it's so easy to jump on board with that. It's so easy to rip on the boss, to rip on the supervisor. A lot of times the break room is full of my wife is stupid and my husband is an idiot. This is damaging. It's absolutely damaging to who you are. It's damaging to your reputation. And people will not respect you if you are part of workroom gossip. Think about this. Have you ever been around somebody who is constantly just talking garbage about other people and why they're smarter and why they shouldn't have done this and their parenting sucks? And right? You don't sit there and think, wow, this person is really brilliant. They've got great insights about all the people around them. What's the thing that you think? Boy, when I'm not with them, I wonder what they say about me. There's no respect earned in gossip. There's no salt and light to be found in talking badly about other people. And finally, probably the most important one to me, because of the type of person I am, be positive. Be positive. Most of the time, most of our work, we've been talking in Bible Connect about work, and work came from God. God gave work. God loves work. And work was a good thing, and then we sinned, and now work is a hard thing. And it's very easy to be negative. I regularly have told staff in the past, they're like, yeah, if you really love to do this, we wouldn't pay you for it. You would pay me to do it. That's why it's work. And it's hard to be positive when you're at work. But did you know that study after study say that judgmental, anxious, negative, angry people suck down the culture of a workplace and they drag people into it? The good news is that positivity has an equal impact on a workplace. And more importantly, did you know that negative people are up to 25% less productive? In some studies, even more than their positive counterparts. Do you want to gain respect? Do you want to make your workplace a great place to work? Do you want to have the respect of your boss? Be the positive guy. Be the gal that's there to not find problems and pile on, but to look for solutions. This is a hard calling that we have, but a very important one. So these are my five tips for being an excellent employee. And if you are like me, you have probably thought of five people who could really use this advice. And that's okay. I mean, it's probably not good, but it's okay. Think about how much better they would be as coworkers, as bosses, if they did take this advice, and how much more you would respect them. And then think about yourself in your workplace. Which of these areas do you need work on? Maybe circle one in your bulletin that you think you probably need some help. Okay, now we're going to move on. If you are a boss, we're going to talk about you for just a minute. There's probably less of us out here who are bosses and supervisors, so we're not going to camp on this very long. But it's important if you're a boss. Just because you're a boss doesn't mean you don't need to earn respect. And so many bosses think that they just demand respect because of their position. And you sure may get people to do what you want because you have a position, but they will never, ever care what you think if you don't earn their respect. So if you want to be salt and light at work, getting them to do what you want cannot be the end game. The end game has to be bigger. It has to be better. Number one is a boss, build trust. Don't lead your staff with fear. understand and recognize that they need a job. And it's your job to help them do their job and to keep their job and to grow as a person. Build trust with the people that work for you. This is a little dicey for me, just so you know. There's a bunch of people in this room who have worked for me. So I need this sermon too. Be humble as a boss. Don't have a lot of surprises come up. Value them. And make sure that you remember that your employees are the ones who help you actually get done what you need to get done. And when you treat employees like this, when you've built trust, when they don't come in every day worried about whether or not you're going to scream at them, when they come in every day and not worry about whether or not they're going to have a job if they make one little mistake, you will earn their respect. A great boss also sets clear expectations and gives regular feedback. It's important that staff know what's expected of them. I know this stuff doesn't sound spiritual, but I'm telling you now, it matters. And if you're going to be a Christian in your workplace, it matters. If you're a boss, do you give consistent feedback to your staff? Not just telling them when they're wrong, but do you try to notice them when they do something right? When they do well at something you've asked them to do? When you're frustrated, is it your fault because you didn't actually give them very clear expectations? It's important that you make your expectations clear as a boss and that you give them regular, consistent feedback, both positive and negative. And finally, bosses, be professional. Be professional at your work. Are you learning and growing? Are you trying to learn how to be a better boss? Or do you think because you got named the boss, you've arrived? If you want your staff to work late, ask them. But remember that work isn't the only thing they live for. One of my early jobs was at McDonald's as a young man. And one of the things I really appreciated about that boss is it was always crazy, it was always chaotic, and I loved that environment. But at McDonald's, you regularly have people who don't show up. And sometimes they would be behind in staff and they would need help. And I remember my boss always said, "Hey, Matt, do you think you can work late?" And if I couldn't or didn't want to, I'd say, "Ah." And she said, "Nope, that's fine. Just if, you know." She never pushed me, never guilt-tripped me, and it made me want to work late for her because I knew she wasn't going to pressure me and she wasn't going to be rude to me and she wasn't going to punish me for not doing something that I hadn't previously agreed to do. And that's what great bosses do. They act professionally around their people. They don't get in fights. They don't get in spats. They also don't talk negatively. They don't gossip. They don't share in the office room culture. Great bosses rise above all of this stuff, and they're professionals. And are you excellent at your work? When you go to work, are you good at what you do? Are you trying to be better? Young people, you're going to have an opportunity to do jobs in the coming years. Maybe you have a job now. At each and every job, no matter how minuscule it is, you have an opportunity to be excellent and to grow. And that's important for you to understand. If you look at Joseph in his life, he went to prison. He didn't belong there. He was excellent. And he rose to prominence even in his prison. And do you think that your job doesn't matter? And are you mailing it in? I'd like to challenge you this morning to be excellent at what you do and thereby earn the respect of those around you. However, earning respect is really only half of the key, isn't it? There's lots of people we respect who are excellent at their jobs, but we don't care what they think about Jesus. We don't care what they think about politics. We don't care about really anything except how they do at their jobs. And so being excellent at your job, earning respect at your job, you remember 8:4. Randy Moss was perhaps one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game. And when he was on the field, he had the full respect of every single defender and every single fan in the world. But do you feel positively about Randy Moss as a person? Do you feel like when he steps off the field, he matters? Because most of us don't. What's missing in Randy Moss and so many of us is character. And when character is fused with respect, when you get respect and you also have character, this is so powerful. This is your opportunity to really, truly impact your workplace. In his book, Formation of Christian Character, William Stratton Bruce described character as being a choice to be and live morally, to mold yourself into the habits of being virtuous. That is, so many of us have good intent and we communicate the right things about our character. We want to do this, we think we're that, we're this kind of person. And what Bruce would say is that our character is who we are. And so our character is not noted for what goes out to the world from us. Our character is what people know of us from who we are, from our behavior over time. Let me give you a good example of the difference between somebody who wants to appear to have character and who does. I work in real estate, and I work with several investors who work on homes. And once I had a contractor, and I was working with a project manager, and he was really proud and excited of this new contractor that he got, because the guy said, oh, I'm great, and I can do this and this and this, and I can get it done by this time, and I'll get it done by this amount, or with this amount of money. And he signed a contract that said he would get it done by this time and for this amount of money. And these are the things that he would do. And the contract was laid out very, very clearly. And I said to my project manager, I don't know if I trust this. This is not the way people do business in this area, and there's a reason for that. And he said, no, no, no. This guy, like, loves Jesus and stuff. I'm sure he'll be fine. All right. Well, it turns out this contractor didn't deliver on time. And he wasn't a week late, and he wasn't 2 weeks late, he wasn't 3 weeks late, he wasn't a month late. I mean, he was really, really, really late. And at some point, maybe 2 or 3 weeks after he was late, he literally walked off the job and sent a text message to the project manager saying, hey, we're done. I'm not working for free anymore. So unless you're going to pay me, I'm done. You can hire somebody else. And project manager called me to find out what the end investor, my client, was going to think. And I said, well, did you pay him for the contract? He said, yeah, he's already gotten all the money for his contract, but he hasn't finished the work. And he just doesn't want to do the work anymore, even though he agreed to do it in writing. I said, yeah, that's a tricky deal. And I'll never forget what the project manager said to me. I'll never forget it. He said, what the blank? This guy listens to Jesus music all day. How could he possibly do this to us? And as a Christian, that's hard to hear. I don't listen to a lot of Jesus music in front of people, but I think character matters. And for me to try to defend somebody who probably does love Jesus, who probably does mean well, but he had a legitimate character flaw. It was a big deal. And so now, rather than proclaiming the name of Jesus, which is, I'm sure, what he thought he was doing by listening to Christian music in his work environment, he really wrecked the name of Jesus. He did damage to the cause of Jesus. He was the opposite of salt and light in his workplace. People will see you for who you are far more than what you say. Do you have a Jesus bumper sticker? Do you listen to KTIS? Good for you. Do you have character? Are you the kind of person who backs all of that and really acts that way? Because Jesus would much rather you toss all of the paraphernalia, all the propaganda, and be a Christian in your workplace. In small group, we talked about these verses. And the question was asked, quite simply, has anyone ever admired your work ethic or the quality of your work? What an interesting question. Let me ask you, has anyone ever admired your work ethic or the quality of your work? I heard an answer that touched my heart. I asked for permission because small group is sacred. Jen Porter is a nurse, used to work in a dental office, and she was telling us, and she's the most humble gal I know. If you don't know her, she's amazing. She told a story about how at her dentist's office, she was the one who always got crabby patients because she had learned to be patient with them. She understood that they needed love, and she loved God and had extended that love to others. And she didn't talk about her faith a lot. She just went about her job with excellence, with character. And there's one particular guy who had come in, and he was cussing and swearing and angry the whole time. He was difficult, and then he had left, and he had called and been cussing at the nurse because he was just upset about how this went. And of course, nobody loves the dentist, but that's still inappropriate. And he came back and was grumpy and grouchy again, and of course, Jen got him. And then every time he called, whoever answered would be like, "Oh, Jen, it's him. Here you go." Right? Why does Jen get this stuff? She's earned respect. She does her job with excellence. And she handles it with character. The guy on the other line, after he had gone through all of his issues with Jen, and I'm paraphrasing the story a little bit, so if I'm getting it wrong, I'm sorry. But this is amazing. He says, "Hey, let me ask you something." And of course, she's like, "Oh, here we go. Are you a Christian?" Can you believe that? She never said the name Jesus once. She didn't play church music around him. She didn't have a bumper sticker. She didn't give him a tract about how to find God. She did her job with excellence. She earned his respect and demonstrated character throughout. And he said, "Are you a Christian?" Isn't that special? And Jen said, "Well, yeah, I am. Like, I could tell because of the way you treated me. I could tell because you were different." Jen was salt and light in her workplace. And that was amazing. And see, that stuff doesn't feel spiritual, does it? It feels spiritual to listen to Jesus music. It feels spiritual to pray before a meal in front of people. It doesn't feel spiritual to let someone swear at you on the phone. It doesn't feel spiritual to be the one in the office that has to take care of the ugliest of people. But it absolutely is. And this is what we talk through. Turn, if you will, real quickly to Romans chapter 5. And in Romans chapter 5, we talked about In Romans chapter 5, we talked about a progression, verses 3 and 4. And here's the progression. "More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope." And what we talked about is this process of sanctification. The process of sanctification is the process, by which God makes righteousness a part of who you are. Sanctification is a big church word. All it means is that God's doing work in us. You become a Christian, that's great. You're justified. You're saved. But God still needs to change us. He still needs to grow us. And Pastor talked about it last week in his sermon, and it was wonderful. We can grow spiritually in our work. And that's all part of the sanctification process, God doing work in us. And here is the transfer of something that seems spiritual to something that doesn't seem spiritual but is absolutely ingrained in us. Look, it starts with suffering, right? And while we're suffering, while someone is being mean and awful to us, it takes every Christian part of us, right, to deal with that guy, to not lash out, to not swear, to love him anyway. Right? And if we suffer enough and we work through it enough and we push through hard, eventually God will turn that into endurance. And while you are enduring this, it's hard, but you can do it. Right? It's hard, but you can do it. It takes less effort now than it used to take when it was just suffering. And eventually, God takes that endurance and turns it into character. And the change from endurance to character is the change from when God made you and you needed to work so hard to be a Christian. You needed to work so hard. It was such a struggle. And over time, through the sanctification process, this has become a part of who you are. Isn't that beautiful? And so now, Jen is the one who gets the phone, right? And it's not like, hey, Jen's the Christian, make her deal with it, right? Jen is the kind of person who. She doesn't need Jesus music, she's got character. Sorry, I shouldn't rip on Jesus music. I love worship music, I'm sorry that I... It's great stuff, you should listen to it, it's wonderful. I just want you to know that it can't be your only testimony at work. It can't be. And is God using your work to sanctify your life? Is God with you at work? Are you growing? Are you building character? Are you working with excellence? Are you doing more than the average employee? Because if you want to be salt and light at work, if you want to matter, if you want to impact the world for Jesus, this is what we've been called to. We haven't been called to make it. We haven't been called to get a paycheck. We've been called to be salt and light, and that calling is high and it's hard. But it's wonderful because at the end is hope. Why do we have hope once we've developed character? Because we know we can do it. Because we know God can bring us through it. Because we know that this is the way God intended it to be, not suffering. It's glorious. This morning I want to challenge you. This week, go out and do what you do. Whether you're a homemaker, a student, an employee, or a boss, go be excellent. Go earn the respect of those people around you. And do it with character. Do it in a way that matters. And make an impact on your world for Jesus. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for our work. You are so worthy of being worked for. You're so worthy of being cared about. Boy, and we just love you so much, Jesus. And I just pray that we, as a cornerstone body, can go out into the world and that we will be excellent, that we will have the respect of people around us, the respect of people who absolutely do not respect our faith, do not respect our beliefs, but Lord, they cannot look past our excellence and our character. Lord, make us the kind of people who will impact people. Make us the kind of people that will be asked, are you a Christian? And not the kind of people who will be asked, I thought that guy was a Christian. Lord, you've called us to something so much higher. And we know we're going to need your help. This isn't easy, but we know you can help us, and we ask you to do this. Jesus, because of you, because of who you are, we will do this. And we trust in you to go with us, to prosper us, and to help us to be salt and light in a dark, dark world that needs you. Amen.